obviously requires financial resources. So just that constant attention and dedication to raising money to support the program. And I will say that the continuum of building evidence is really important. And, you know, for us to not really be satisfied that our outcomes are strong, but always challenging to think about how can we strengthen and improve and refine. And it helps funders continue to see us as leading in this field. I'm happy to take questions in the Q&A as all of the presenters wrap up.
Hi, my name is Adam Auer, and I've had the opportunity to work with Citizen Schools in a number of capacities over the last six years. First, my role was as the Chief Talent Officer, and today I lead HR and many components related to AmeriCorps as a provider of outsourced services through my company, Positively Partners. Positively Partners is a social enterprise that works with nonprofits in Boston, D.C. across the country to deliver mission-aligned HR services at lower costs. Today, I'm speaking on behalf of Citizen Schools with a focus on its scale journey, which has significantly evolved over its past 20 years of operation. And I think it's a different journey than the stories that are being shared by other panelists, because Citizen Schools achieved significant scale, then contracted, and is now thinking about scale in some different ways. To look at our mission, as an organization, Citizen Schools seeks to ensure that every adolescent has the skills, mindset, and networks needed to inspire them as lifelong learners in ways that position them to thrive in the 21st century. It's a mission that has remained the cornerstone of our work for more than two decades, but how we live it and execute this work continues to evolve, and it's shaped the way we think about scale and opportunities to work both inside and outside of the existing education system. Our goal is to be a disruptive innovator in support of middle school students and the broader ecosystem in which students exist. Our vision statement, the next slide, if I can move that along. Our vision statement, the longer term aim of our work is now to serve 1 million adolescents by 2025. We're providing hands-on learning experiences for students that are led by experts from the community. And that's always been the core of our work. We link students with experienced experts across the professional disciplines that help to engage middle school students and prepare them for college and careers. And while hands-on learning experience is the core, how we make these experiences available to students, the approach to reaching more students and assuring the quality of those interactions has really evolved. And I think the best way to think about that is through the lens of Clay Christensen's work on disruptive innovation. Like many organizations, we launched into this journey to affect systems change from a position outside the system, you know, thinking how we could build infrastructure to support that change and then kind of integrate that later, you know, into the system. And we did it through our after-school programs, which leveraged AmeriCorps teaching fellows, and we created an extended day for middle school students that connected them with these hands-on learning opportunities. And also just helped middle schools generally kind of think about how to kind of serve the needs of students, you know, in the 21st century. Our journey to scale brought us to seven states at our largest, and we had a cohort of almost 130 AmeriCorps members serving in our program. And whilst it was a tremendous opportunity to learn about what worked better and to understand the challenges that middle schools face growing the skills and mindsets needed for success in the 21st century, it also relied on a really robust infrastructure to deliver our program. It often required us to build infrastructure that mirrored what was already in place across many schools. And that added cost, that meant that many schools that needed us, communities that could benefit most from our program, weren't able to afford us. And that led us down a journey to think about scale differently, to consider ways we could better partner with schools to leverage what was already working, what could be buttressed and when we could work as a member of the school community in different ways to support common goals. So the journey to think a bit differently about how we could spark and support innovation from within the system caused us to evolve our program model in ways that continues to envision kind of direct service, this provision of after-school programming as the core of what we do, yet disaggregated two components of our work in ways that allow us to scale in concert with school partners and rely on their infrastructure so that we can complement them rather than sort of build structures around them. In essence, we evolved in a way that allows us to partner with schools as part of their existing school day as an alternative to our after-school program offerings. So if you look at the slide, it starts with sort of expanding the school day at the core, our direct service component, and that provides the opportunity for us to continue to allow AmeriCorps members to serve and to do great work within schools and to establish proof points that demonstrate the larger impact on hands-on learning programming. But then we've evolved the first icon there, Catalyst, which provides the opportunity for us to teach and support others in the delivery of the hands-on learning experiences. And then the third component to the right, US 2020, creates the infrastructure and scaffolding needed to introduce the experts, those professionals, those skilled professionals into the school day. So in concert, these three program elements provide a revised pathway to scale, which will continue to expand the organization's reach beyond what it was able to accomplish through direct service alone. The next slide shows kind of our journey to impact. And this begins again with direct service at our core, but then in this megaphone sort of amplifies that impact through a new pathway to scale, which calls for us to nurture the supply chain for expert mentors who lead the hands-on learning, to grow the relationship and demand for our partnership with schools, to grow capacity for this program within communities, and then achieve broader scale in the form of a movement. And to bring that full circle, you know, back to what I mentioned around Clay Christensen, this is just achieving the goal of transformative education in a new way that sort of is more embedded, you know, in the system and is less reliant on the robust operational infrastructure for program delivery that Citizen Schools was, you know, kind of constantly building and tweaking to ensure quality delivery. So my last comments just kind of relate to how AmeriCorps continues to fit into this, because it's been interesting as we kind of have shrunk a little bit our direct service offerings, AmeriCorps has continued to be such a prominent component of our work, both through kind of traditional service opportunities, but it's also given us lots of opportunity to think about VISTAs for capacity building. And then just this larger movement building has helped us to envision career pathways differently for those AmeriCorps members to think about ways that they can participate in this movement after their service. As community liaisons, but also embedded within schools that support the work. Happy to answer questions at the end, but thanks for hearing a little bit more about our journey.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dean Elson. I'm the Chief Knowledge Officer at Reading Partners. Reading Partners is proud to be celebrating our 20th anniversary year of providing services to students and schools throughout the country. Our vision at Reading Partners is a future where all children in the United States have the reading skills necessary to reach their full potential. And our mission is to help children become lifelong readers by empowering communities to provide individualized instruction with measurable results. Our program model is an evidence-based tutoring program. We work in public schools, including charter schools, and it is a public school literacy intervention that is absolutely powered by AmeriCorps members. We are a proud national service program, and our AmeriCorps members and our community volunteers work in schools with students. The majority of our schools are Title I schools in under-resourced communities, and they work with them twice weekly for about 45 minutes. These are kindergarten through fourth grade students primarily who are struggling with reading and learning the basic foundational literacy skills they need to succeed in school and in life. It looks like some of our slide content got cut off a little bit here, so I'll just help you as we move along. So this first slide is talking about the questions, the question related to evidence building and our decision to scale up. So like many of the other presenters today, I'll share with you that we also had internal student assessment data for several years that showed we were looking and seeing strong results for our students and seeing strong improvement in their literacy skills and their growth during a school year. And then we were able to reduce grade level reading gaps with them. And so before I joined Reading Partners back in 2011, the organization had begun a small-scale matched comparison study with the design and the oversight from a university professor and some data analysis by a doctoral student. And this allowed us to engage in what I would call a lower stakes evaluation or a study, and allowed us to learn a little bit more and engage in a more rigorous evaluation of our impact than the organization had ever done previously. The early results from that study, along with high satisfaction from principals we were working with, a long waiting list for new school partners, and also an aligned board and leadership team really pushed us to look for additional funding and opportunities to scale. We really believed that we had a successful program model and we wanted to bring it to more under-resourced communities. And so several foundations, individual donors, board members, and others made introductions, and that really allowed us to explore partnership opportunities in new states and districts. We also had become an AmeriCorps program back in 2010. And as a proud national service program, we work with several state AmeriCorps commissions as well, and that has provided funds and support to our organization to be able to grow and bring the program to more states. We are currently serving approximately 11,000 students a year in 14 regions, and so those regions are in nine states plus Washington, D.C. And a turning point, a real catalyst or catalyzing moment for Reading Partners happened back in 2010 and 2011 when we competed for and won Federal Social Innovation Fund, or SIF grant, through the Corporation for National Community Service. And that grant provided funding to us, an opportunity to request matching funds from other donors, and a way to share our work and get others excited about what we were doing. And it really allowed us a new way to pay for, or our first time ever actually, a large, independent, highly rigorous program evaluation. And through the SIF grant and the support of the M. McConnell-Clark Foundation and our partnership with MDRC, our research firm, we were able to launch and go through the process of a randomized control design or trial study or evaluation. And so that was carried out from 2012 to 2015. It was a big a process or a large process for us as an organization to learn and grow as we went along. But we learned a lot from that study, and the outcomes were really helpful for us as we talked about the benefits that Reading Partners brought. And I want to just highlight here that both that SIF study as well as the second SIF grant that brought us to the state of Colorado and a partnership with CNCS again and Mile High United Way allowed us to grow to Colorado. Both the SIF studies allowed us to look at implementation data as well, and I find that really incredibly important. I want to underscore the need to do that. How do you learn? What are the lessons you can learn about your implementation fidelity and program quality that maybe you didn't know before, and I believe other presenters today had mentioned the same thing, and that you're not focused only on the impacts. And then lastly, just in terms of our decision to scale, just want to highlight that our early evidence of success and student impact, those early studies along with the SIF studies as well, and the valued asset that school and district partners felt that we were, have really allowed us to continue to scale and bring our services to more schools and more districts over time. This next slide focuses on the question around the critical preparatory work and how the organization supports scaling up. So as with many other presenters today, we really focus on having a clear program model and theory of change and evolving that over time. We believe that ensuring the model has certain standardized elements that have been tested. I think you want to do that at least internally initially and then work toward external tests and evaluations as well. I think it's important to ask, what do you know about your program's success and how do you know it? And then what are the first things first that you know you have to get right for the model to achieve success in a new location? Some of our other presenters today talked about partnerships, and that's certainly incredibly important here at Reading Partners. Fee-for-service, inter-philanthropic investment, local leadership, key staff roles, et cetera. We also feel that alignment from the board, the leadership team, and also our regional executive directors and boards around expansion and scaling up to address the challenge while focusing on continual improvement. All of that is important too. Our key functions, many key functions, need to have both good leaders or good talent, strong talent, and functional expertise. And over time, we're able to build that expertise and add more talent to the organization. We're very pleased that we've been able to do that in areas of program, data, evaluation, development, finance, HR, IT, operations, et cetera. We've also talked about the importance of having an expansion checklist and a clear timeline for go and no-go decisions. When in the year is the right time for you as an organization to make those decisions? And in our experience, in the time that I've been here, we have looked at bringing the program to additional locations and decided not to, in fact, follow through. And sometimes during a rapid expansion cycle, some places it just wasn't feasible. We looked at our internal capacity and operational capacity to be able to do so. And in some cases, we had to back off. So I would recommend that you consider that carefully. I think it's important to achieve clarity and being transparent about where we were going to scale and why and what the opportunities that existed around sustainable funding. We felt it was very important to not just think about the first year you go to a city, but more what's the three-year time frame around expansion and the discussions with school and district partners about the value ahead of our model and how it aligned to their local vision or their blueprint for literacy success. Obviously, as everyone talks about, it's important to continue to raise more funding, support expansion and improvement. And so that's really key, making sure we are aligning annually as an organization on our key priorities and projects. We openly debate the must-have investments versus the nice-to-have investments and projects that might need to be pushed out farther. And finally, anyone that knows me knows that data matter a lot to me and the teams that I work with. And so having data on learning and the ability to tell an impact story are important as well. And I will underscore here again that qualitative data can be very important as well as quantitative data. I know I'm running short on time, so I'm going to go quickly through the next slide. I'd be happy to answer more questions as we get into the next section. But a few key bullets here about what are key challenges at Reading Partners and what we've learned about effective scaling. One is to document success. Have written program fidelity guidelines and quality standards, provide training on those guidelines, and use quality assurance processes that are tied to program, operational, and financial data. It's important to balance scaling, I think, with core program improvement. So while you're trying to continue to improve and reflect on and change certain elements potentially of your core model as you learn and you grow, sometimes you only have so much capacity and so many resources to do, you can't do everything. So trying to find the right balance for your organization with scaling and that core program improvement is important. Encouraging innovation, fidelity to a model that's proven successful is really important to continued success, but we also believe an organization needs to have a certain degree of innovation and regional or site flexibility. So within that, I think expanding the sources of innovation, not all great ideas come from national or the headquarters. Think about the process you need to use to encourage and support innovative ideas and sharing across your network as you scale up. Last few things, secure multi-funding commitments. I talked about that earlier. That's really important. You should expect everyone in the organization to be a fundraiser. I really like what was said earlier about the importance of adding talent. Sometimes outside the nonprofit space and thinking about corporate and marketing folks to join your organization as well. And then lastly, operational efficiency certainly matters. Use cost and other financial metrics as well as operational metrics to drive your core business functions and figure out when and how scaling provides same or similar levels of program success with fewer resources and which resources can get you to more with less. Finally, prepare the talent bench recognition, I think it's important to recognize that not everyone will be at the organization for 5-10 years. You will have important leaders and other folks leave the organization from time to time. And so it's important to be aware of and plan for talent needs. Even before there are signs that someone might leave, you want to mitigate the potential loss of expertise and knowledge. And again, that goes back to the importance of documenting your success in processes as well.
Okay, thank you. I think we heard a lot of great information. I just wanted to point out a couple of things that struck me as each of you were sharing your scaling experiences and journeys. And I just thought it'd be interesting to point them out and then certainly turn it over to questions that I'm sure folks have both in the room and on the phone. So one thing that really struck me as you were all talking was that you all seem to be nicely embedded inside of organizations that appreciate a culture of learning and really support a culture of learning. And by that I mean, for whatever reasons, you all sort of have this story of, you know, having this openness to inquiry, to the pathway of continuous learning, not being afraid to realize that maybe you were on the wrong path and pivoting and taking another path. So I think that's an important part of this scaling conversation, that you were able to operate in an environment that allowed you to fail, to regroup, and to try again. I think what was also striking about each one of your journeys is that you all took a very systematic approach, not only to your evidence building, because you know you all did a very thoughtful, rigorous sort of approach to building your evidence in various ways, but also to your decisions around scaling. You realized that in addition to having to sort of incrementally build your data and to demonstrate results and to prove your outcomes, you also had to make your decisions around whether or not you wanted to expand or not. And in some cases, expanding and then deciding to retreat a bit for whatever reason. So I think that's also reflective of a willingness to embrace sort of this continuous learning and improvement cycle. Another thing that struck me as you all were speaking was this sort of tension between fidelity and flexibility. You all started your stories with, you know, we had to really figure out what our stable model was. We had to make sure we kind of knew what our core components were. That's what we could link to our outcomes. But then you started, you know, bringing it to different campuses, to different communities, to different states, and you realized that you needed some flexibility in there. And then what is that balance? What is the pieces that you absolutely have to keep in order to achieve your outcomes versus what pieces actually need to be flexible? Because I think the other piece that you all spoke to was the importance of your relationships, and that this is not only an evidence building process, but it's a relationship building process, and that whether it's a partner in a school, whether it's a partner who's going to bring resources to your effort, or whether it's a partnership with folks inside of your own organization, this is a process that requires extensive relationship nurturing as well. And then lastly, I think I would point out, I think each of you spoke to the role that National Service can play in expanding these solutions in communities, and I think you spoke to different ways. They can be the actual service delivery providers. They can be someone who's helping you with your operational infrastructure, which also has to scale as you're scaling. And so I think that was interesting to think about how National Service can be a part of this sort of expanding solutions that have been proven to work. So for those on the phone who perhaps are new to the National Service world, thinking about ways in which streams of service might help you take some evidence-based practices or programs to scale, I think that's an interesting resource for folks to consider. So with that, thank you again. I will hand it over to Andrea to facilitate some of the Q&A.
Okay. So let's see. We're going to open it up. Let's Q&A. And I'd like to just